Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Break On Through with Pam on Friday. Sit in with Aphasiana and Babel as they teach the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. Join Arcana and Stellina as they go delving into the darkness every other Sunday. Now, these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How goes it?
All righty.
Very cool. Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets. I had an awesome day today. We had my baby's 15-year birthday party because today she turned 15. We had pie and cookies and ice cream. And the child now has more money than I do. That's mainly because it's near the end of the month. Because nobody knows what to buy a 15-year-old, so they all just give her money. But it was a good day. Weather's a little too hot, but for my taste, but that's okay. That's okay. Life is good. Poetry is good. And you know what? I'm finally learning how to make a decent pie crust. It's always been something I've struggled with, but these last couple times I've made a homemade rhubarb pie, it has turned out really good.
Rhubarb.
Yeah. Yes, and great lineup of poetry tonight, and I have to say, awesome topic. I really enjoy the humor of W.C. Fields. Definitely plenty to bite into as far as inspiration.
Yeah, there were a couple of good ones in there. Just like, what was it? That, I don't drink water. Fish stuck in it.
Yep. I mean, I guess if you have to have a reason not to drink water, that is a good one. All right. Well, we do have somebody waiting online, so I'm going to bring them on. And I'd like to say, welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us.
Hello, Pam. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Randy. How you doing?
Doing great. And glad to hear that that your pie crust is coming out well now that you've teased us and made us all hungry and we don't have any pie.
Yeah, right. After 35 years of making nothing but crisps, I can finally delve into the realm of pies. Who knows what craziness may happen next. I might make a French silk or a pecan pie.
Or just stay away from the, just stay away from the cheese curd pie.
The cheese curd pie? or the cow patty pie? The chocolate pies laying out in the fields.
Yes.
I think they call that.
Avoid those.
Well, Rex, I am ready to get this ball rolling whenever you are.
Bring it on.
All right. Well, Randy, I'll go ahead and I'll put your write up first. So when you see it, go ahead and give it a read.
All right. Yes, mine was, prompt number 8. It's morally wrong to allow a sucker to keep his money. That was the prompt that I wrote this to. And I love W.C. Fields. I grew up watching his movies and I've always been fascinated by him. You know, he managed to make up a lot of imaginary words so he could kind of defeat the people that wouldn't let him use all the colorful foul language that he'd prefer to use in movies and couldn't at the time. So he was very creative and very funny. I loved him. And my poem is The Code. It's true, a fool and his money are soon parted. First find a fool, that is where it all gets started. A greedy poor soul looking for a special deal will easily succumb to a well-practiced deal. With a dream of getting something for nothing, a mark ripe for the picking, no need for bluffing. And just really men with a hope of a big payoff, a gluttonous pig will run straight to the trough. Most often it's so easy, it shouldn't be a crime, separating a willing sucker from his last dime. They believe they're winning until the very end, and they find out they've nothing left to spend. Now the scam is complete, money in the bag, the joke is on them, and it is your turn to brag. You have lived up to the con man's private code, fleecing the flock, then happily hitting the road. You can't feed an honest man, never give a sucker an even break, or smarten up a chump. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Oh, I did enjoy this one for sure. It has that W.C. Fields humor, great rhyme and flow, wonderful word choices, and a great take on the chosen prompt. I really like some of the words you've thrown in here, like spiel and chump was really great. I also liked, you know, it's funny because I've just recently been watching on Amazon Video the show, what's it called? Leverage, the show Leverage. And they always call the person that they're going after the mark. And so when I saw you use the word mark, I had to smile because I'm like, you know, I can relate to that because of what I've been watching. But great lines here. With a dream of getting something for nothing, a mark ripe for the picking, no need for bluffing, and just reel him in with a hope of a big payoff, the gluttonous pig will run straight to the trough. You know, and it's funny because it really does speak on human nature to want that, like, quick payout, that quick satisfaction. Like, I want to make as much money as possible with as doing as little work as possible. And if you promise me that, I'm going to give you my last dime. So it definitely shows the whole attitude of those willing to bet big on something that's an empty promise, and how easy it is to take advantage of fools. And as I said, it really does speak on the whole idea that a fool and his money are soon parted. So very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Well, I got to start with a picture. Right from the movie, Never Give a Sucker an Even Break. Nicely done. That's going back a ways, finding that pick right there. So I appreciate that one. And also, the thought with the well-practiced spiel is perfect, as well as the gluttonous pig will run straight to the trough. But also, you hit on separating a willing sucker from his last dime, and the thought of a con man's private code. Boy, does that remind me of carnival barkers and what P.T. Barnum said back in the day. A sucker is born every minute. You show him a little mermaid, and it's just made up of two different things, and they'll pay big bucks to come in and see it. Even though back then, a nickel a pop was big bucks. So that's pretty cool. But this does fit on that the ease of how, and they all depend on roofs, whether it's the practiced carny barker or the guy in the big top, or, as you got it here, the con man. They need the sucker. And the sucker is always up after something a little bit more than he has to. Easy money doesn't come easy. It usually comes with empty pockets because you've been fleeced. Nicely done, Randy.
Thanks, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have The Reluctant Cowboy by Swimmer of Seas. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us.
Okay. The Reluctant Cowboy by Swimmer of Seas. I got your picture in my captain. I've got your picture in my cabin. Your smiling face is everywhere. Your ghost is what I sail on through the ocean of your hair. And my work, it takes me everywhere and nowhere, fast and slow. It takes a man to plow an acre. It takes a woman to make it grow. The sea elevates my singing despite my ungrateful tone. My thoughts are made of music. My thoughts are mine alone. Then you wander warm inside my mind like a gift from God to me. It takes a man to bring his story. It takes a woman to set him free. Girl, we never did much talking, and when we did, it was so brief. We laughed at each other, and we smiled through pain and grief. You made the mundane magic, and you fought hard for all of your dreams. It takes a man to set a plow right. It takes a woman to hitch a team. There's an empty chair that held you, a rare creature tall and true. If life has taught me one thing, I've learned it all from you. And you laughed at my cowboy movies as I turned into my old man. It takes a woman to work his heart out. It takes a man to work his heart out. It takes a woman to give a damn. And poem. And Swimmer took, it ain't what they call you, it's what you answer to. And we'll start with you, Randy. What do you think?
I really like this. This was very cleverly written and well written. And it had a wonderful flow to it. It was a nice story, kind of even touching in a way. And I like the recurring kind of two lines there. It takes a man to plow an acre. It takes a woman to make it grow. And then it takes a man to bring a story. It takes a woman to set him free. And, you know, those were really nice payoffs after each stanza. Girl, we never did much talking. And when we did, it was so brief. We laughed at each other and we smiled through our pain and grief. And you made the mundane magic and you fought hard for your dream. I mean, that's just a very nice thought and a nice flow to it, and very personal and very relatable. I thought it was a very nice poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Randy. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, great. First of all, great read there, Rex. I really liked this one. The rhyme in it is great. The imagery, the wordplay. I've really come to appreciate how Swimmer of Seas, plays with words. I like how this is a combination of melancholiness and humor. I feel like there's some sexual innuendo, and it takes a man to plow an acre. It takes a woman to make it grow, you know, and I also like the word play of it takes a man to bring his story. It takes a woman to set him free. In other words, you know, find a good woman and end up spending a lot of money on her. I think there's plenty of bite in this, but there's also a kind of sadness. I get the idea of a man who, you know, is like a truck driver, you know, where he says, and my work, it takes me everywhere and nowhere, fast and slow. Like the idea that you're so often away from home that you can't connect with or get anything done around home. And the sense of loss that comes through in the lines, there's an empty chair that held you, a rare creature tall and true. And I think many of us can relate to the idea of turning into our old man or our old woman, and you laughed at my cowboy movies as I turned into my old man. And though that line there connects back really well to the title, The Reluctant Cowboy, the man who was determined not to become something that his father was and ended up becoming that in the end. So excellent, thoughtful write by Swimmer of Seas, and very well done.
Nice, Sam. Well, I'm going to go with that. It is a nice touch between melancholy and warmth, because it does offer up both ends. But the real thing is, she's probably passed on. I get the impression, because it drops out first. I got your picture in my cabin. Your smiling face is everywhere. Your ghost is what I sail on through the ocean of your hair. And my work, it takes me everywhere and nowhere fast and slow. Then again, then you wander warm inside my mind like you're a gift from God to me. Then he hits on the empty the chair now down near the bottom. So there's and the reminder that he's learned everything as far as he's concerned about maybe having someone, and the pleasure is that he's got the remembrances. So he might be alone, but he's got her to keep him company on those days when things get real hard. So nicely done, Swimmer. Yes. All right, Pam, what you got here?
Oh, excuse me. Frog in my throat. All right, let me go ahead and grab the next one. And do-do-do. All right. Up next, we have What's in a Name by Jenny the Deep. And it goes like this. Juliet asked Shakespeare, "What's in a name?" "Well, I proclaim, it's just something they call us." "Dear girl," expecting us to answer so clever, "if you want to be called differently today, they put you to shame, just like they did Romeo and Juliet. In death, they are still scarred. A rose will still smell as sweet if called by another, yet they declare war if a Montague identifies as a Capulet or Dare falls in love with one. Why ignite rage over one's name? Tomorrow, your name, they will soon forget. If I died tomorrow, would they really know I, a Jenny, that would rather be in Alexandria? Why worry? For I will always answer for them. The name they always engraved into my soul, always to be lost and confused. I, too, like Juliet, will be tragically stuck in this game of self-identity, shamed until death." End poem.
Great read, Pam, and Jenny took that very same quote. It ain't what they call you, it's what you answer to. A nice bit of humor in there, too. Randy, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a very direct take on that prompt. Straight to the point. Juliet asked Shakespeare, "What's in a name?" "Well, I proclaim, it's just something they call us. Dear girl, expecting us to answer so clever. If you want to be called differently today, they put you to shame, just like they did Romeo and Juliet. And death, they are still scared." It's, why would you be concerned what people call you or what your name is? You are who you are, and we just deal with that. It's a label that, you know, our parents gave us at one time, but it's not necessarily what we are in reality. It's just a label on it. So, I thought it was a very clever take on the prompt, and I liked it.
Nice. Thank you, Randy. Pam, you got to read it. Well, about you.
Yeah, I really like this. I thought it was clever to reference Romeo and Juliet and a rose as any other, by any other name would smell just as sweet, by Shakespeare. I like how this speaks on a couple different ideas for me. First of all, you know, it speaks on the idea of trying to build your own identity beyond your family name. But it also makes me think of how, you know, our parents choose our names for us when we're babies. And of course, you know, they choose names that they like or have meaning to them. And that's beautiful. You know, and it's a wonderful thing. But sometimes you grow up thinking that your name just doesn't quite feel right to you. Or maybe it's not even so much the name as the idea of the identity they try to give you with the name. Now, my name, Pamela, means sweet as honey, and I always like to warn people that that's a false label. Don't believe it. But I thought this was a wonderful write by Jenny and very well done.
It is. It had me thinking of MASH and how Hawkeye was on this huge binge, reaching out by telephone, letter, and everything else, all from Korea to America, to find out what BJ's initial stood for in his name, BJ.
Oh, I remember that.
And he finally admits at the back end, it doesn't mean anything. They're just the initials of my parents, who were B. Honeycutt and J. Honeycutt, as in B-E-A and J-A-Y.
Yeah.
I looked at his face to find out, hey, there ain't nothing behind it except two initials for my parents.
I remember that. That was funny. And actually, my mom's father, my paternal grandfather, his middle initial is S, and that's all it is. He does not actually have a middle name. It's just Howard. It was Howard S. Heller. So, yep, that does happen.
Oh, no, it's cool. There was another one. There was another one from the Dick Van Dyke Show. They named Robbie their son by the name of, crap. It was the name of the sled from Citizen Kane.
Rosebud?
Yes, Rosebud, and it stood for Robert Oscar Samuel Edward Bernard Ulysses David. They had to get all the relatives in on it.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Now, I do like Jenny even dropped that little bit of humor in here, too. I, a Jenny, would rather be in Alexandria? Can I question that motif? So, yes. Nicely done, Jenny. You went literal, and that worked really well. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. And Randy, if I could, I'm going to have you read one last one before you have to leave us.
Sure.
All right. So let me go ahead and grab that. And we have... Cats and Mice Can't Be Friends by Lex Wilkerson.
Cats and Mice Can't Be Friends. I always loved his whiskers, the way they twitched when he was thinking of a teasing moment, or dropped or drooped when I played hard to get. I hated the way he put his ears back when I told him I needed space, and thought of his growl sent shivers down my spine. Mice don't like to be friends with me. I felt pity, so I brushed up against him. I treasured him and thought he felt the same. Hunger prevailed, though, as it always does, and the time bomb in his stomach ticked down. I heard it. I knew it was going to explode. That evening, after a long conversation, he offered me a bite of cheese. His only request was that I close my eyes while I ate it. I never saw the light of day again. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you. That the quote for that was something about the cat should eat the cheese and put his mouth over the rat hole as bait for the mice.
Yeah, it was prompt 7. I'm the rat. He's the cat.
Cool. Thank you, Randy. Pam?
Yes, I enjoyed this. And how cool to see somebody new write for the show, Lex Wilkerson. I'm definitely going to have to check out more of their poetry. They have such an adorable picture of a little white fluffy dog. But I like this. I like this because it makes me think of like an Aesop's fable or another type of a story write that uses animals and teaches kind of like a moral lesson. And I like that the lesson here is the whole idea of be wary who you make friends with. That whole idea of a scorpion will always be a scorpion. A hungry cat will always be a hungry cat. This had great first-person narrative. It was entertaining all the way through. And, of course, that end, you know, you see it coming, but you still can't help but feel a bit sorry for that poor little mouse. You know, and I like how they bring in where it says, mice don't like to be friends with me. I felt pity, so I brushed up against him. Isn't that the way we always get suckered in, you know, with some sob story? So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Randy, how about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, I felt the same way. You get to... You can see where it was going with each line, but it's still, you know, you wondered exactly how that end was gonna come about. And, you know, it just kind of made me think, you know, like she said, that mice don't like to be friends with me. It quite often we make friends with people who we shouldn't. For one reason or another, we're either taken in by them or we let our defenses down, and we usually end up regretting it in the end. But this is kind of like that, and beware of greed-sparing gifts kind of a deal. Yeah, I thought it was cleverly written, and I really liked it.
That's a great analogy, Randy. Perfect. Thank you very much. And, yeah, you could see where this was going, especially the right before that, mice don't like to be friends with me. He hit that. I hated the way he put his ears back when I told him I needed space. The thought of his growl sent shivers down my spine. Yeah, you know cats love to play with their food first, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nothing like being baited totally with the cheese angle as the trap at the back end, except the trap isn't the spring-loaded kind. It's sharp teeth. It is a nice little touch of humor. I like that, Lex. Thank you very much. All right, Pat, Pam.
All right. Well, up next we have A Sip Too Far by Weaver of Dreams. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
A Sip Too Far by Weaver of Dreams. This may be a day like no other. My private office stash has been compromised by someone who is either very stupid or has a death wish. My luncheon has been uncorked and sampled. It is bad enough that my artistic flair is being stifled. I merely tried to bring a soupçon of wit and elan to that mundane column known as births, marriages, obituaries, or hatched, matched, and dispatched. It appears that describing the bride's mother as a milf is not PC. Neither should I sneak into wedding breakfast, christening luncheons, nor wakes in future. End poem. all right, Pam.
Oh, that was great. Wonderful read, Rex. And I tell you, I really like that Kate has taken the W.C. Field type of humor and just ran she's really, you know, put a bit of a modern twist on it, but still kept it almost like within the time period. I really like how she touches on the idea that W.C. Fields was not just, you know, a comedian. He also did some writing. The first person narrative of this is great. The humor just cracks me up all the way through. I mean, honest to goodness, I could quote this whole poem for its humor. But I will say that I definitely appreciated the use of the word soup con and the end parts with, I merely tried to bring a soup con of wit and elan to that mundane column known as births, marriages, obituaries, hat, or, you know, and then changes the name, hatched, matched, and dispatched. And, oh, this made me, so this cracked me up. It appears that describing the bride's mother as a MILF is not PC. Oh, my gosh, yes, definitely spot on W.C. Fields humor and very well done.
Well, somebody might have popped the cork on that bottle. And that someone had, once you chose the prompt number six, was somebody took the cork out of my lunch. Some weasel stole the cork out of my lunch. And she hits on that one. And sampled is bad enough that my artistic flair and angle. But obviously, once he found the cork gun, he said, all right, I can't restopper it, so I might as well finish it off and then get into that sort of, yes, I've had a nip or two, and yes, births, marriages, and obituaries, yeah, they're hatched, matched, and dispatched. Well, that's not really that wasn't PC either, as well as the MILF. Brought that one forward. Wonder what they did call those back in the day. A hot to trotty? A hottie to trotty. Oh, well. But I do like the fact that if you're loaded walking into or trotting into wedding breakfast, christening luncheons, or wakes, well, the wake might be advantageous because everybody else is getting drunk too. So, but the other two, they wouldn't like the wit. Although at the wake, you could stand next to the coffin. He's got a drink in his hand. You got a drink in his hand. You could tell him jokes all day long. He wouldn't matter at all.
Absolutely. Right? Oh, so true. So true. Great comment, Rex. All right. Yeah. Let's see what we need next. And let's see here. We have... Queen of the Female Mental by... And is that the full title? I have to click on the link to make sure I'm reading the full title.
No, Dangerously Mental.
Okay. All right. Yep, it did change the title. Okay, the title is Dangerously Mental by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. Yep, it's a bit on the side of insane. Doesn't go against my wacky grain. But let me just say, I'm crazy, because you, dick boy, keep me this way. I'm normal to a point, a bit more nutty after hits off my pipe. You're looking mighty sweaty, may want to wipe a junk drawer. Hang on, hang on. I open it wide, and oops, what fell to the floor? Look at all this, look at that. What's this, what's that? Much to explore. My lunacy amps up to a big wild high. Looking at junk, I'm blissfully berserk. I can almost forget how you're still a jerk. Batteries, clothespins, paper clips, and more. something even moving on the most bottom of the drawer. A roach, a spider, a bug-doo-boo ghost. I'm cuckoo and flaky. Keep that in mind. It's you that must look out for your very own kind. When near a crazy lady who may be your worst walk-in trap, I can act wild and manic or most mild and gentle. Just keep your safe your escape map, because I'm dangerously mental. End poem.
Crazy, Pam. When Julie dropped this and I looked at, I think I told her I figured you'd go for this this particular quote, just for the sheer fun. It's a bit on the side of insane. Doesn't go against my wacky grain, but let me tell you, let me just say, I'm crazy because you, dick boy, keep me this way. Right off the bat, she's already walking into the unloading. I never stopped there. A bit more nutty after hits off my pipe. And then the junk drawer, the ever-looming large junk drawer with all the shit in it. It's the place where everything goes to die. Batteries, clothespins, broken drill bits, you name it. It's in the junk drawer for some odd reason instead of getting tossed. And funny part is, half of that's hers to begin with. She's having the fun with it. So my lunacy amps up to a big wild high. Looking at junk, I'm blissfully berserk. I can almost forget how you're still a jerk. Boy, she's unloading, having some fun. And then the back end, when near a crazy lady who may be a worse walk-in trap, I can act wild and manic, almost mild and gentle. Just keep safe your escape mask, because I'm dangerously mental. Well, at least she's owning up to her own faults in the moment while chewing his ass out. What about you?
Oh, I did enjoy this. And you're right. It was definitely a perfect Julie Buck quote. And I'm glad she grabbed a hold of it and dug in. I love the craziness of this, you know, and the rhyme has a very Dr. Seuss-like feel to it, which is totally awesome. This cracked me up. I mean, I so can relate to the whole junk drawer idea. I have at least two junk drawers, if not more. I'm always discovering treasures. I tried telling my oldest one time that this one specific drawer I have in my bedroom dresser, I called it my notebook and pen drawer, and she looked in it and she goes, "Mom, that's a junk drawer." But I really like this, and as always, you know, Julie is edgy and hard hitting with a great sense of humor. Yep, it's a bit on the side of insane, doesn't go against my wacky grain, but let's just say I'm crazy because you, dick boy, keep me this way. But then the absolute excitement of finding a junk drawer to look through. Look, a junk drawer. Hang on. I open it wide and oops, what fell to the floor? Look at all this. Look at all that. What's this? What's that? Much to explore. That's the part that really made me smile and gave me that whole Dr. Seuss vibe with the rhyme. And of course the end, you know, that warning, you know, sometimes I can be gentle, but you know what? Be prepared with your escape route. Very cool and very well done.
Or with you next.
All right. Well, up next we have Aren't They All by Thomas B. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Aren't They All by Thomas B. Said she was crazy about me. I was sure of only one thing. No matter what the outcome, She definitely made crazy sound appealing when I should have paid attention to what was happening when I was thinking with the wrong things. There is something about a smile, curves that don't know when to quit. Something about the right set of eyes, the way they cook as the sun's about to set. Logic is a fine way to work out an equation, but there are numbers that function without logic upon the heart. When she looked at me, I forgot how my thinking got its start. I may be just another fool being played and taken to school, but I will be happy all the way to hell as long as I am the guy under her spell. Yeah, women drive you crazy. I could think of worse ways to go. I hope you are all given an opportunity to enjoy the effects of lunacy, as I have a great story to tell. End poem. And that was on the same one as Julie. No doubt exists that all women are crazy. It's only a question of degree.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, it's always so interesting and fun to see how people take the same prompt. And I like how they both have their humor in the right. But Tom takes it in a way that, you know what, sometimes a bit of craziness is fun and alluring. And I really did like how this speaks on the idea of being just, you know, driven completely crazy in love and in lust. And hey, you know, as the ending says, there's worse ways to go. I did like that ending. Yeah, women drive you crazy. I can think of worse ways to go. I hope you are all given an opportunity to enjoy the effects of lunacy, as I have a great story to tell. It's like, you know, the idea of living life, love, and lust to the fullest, and giving yourself an opportunities to have great stories. I definitely also, I like this all the way through, but another part I really appreciated and enjoyed was, logic is a fine way to work out an equation, but there are numbers that function without logic upon the heart. When she looked at me, I forgot how my thinking got its start. You know, there are times the brain works and there are times it shuts down and it's time for the other organs to start working. So excellent write by Thomas B. Great take on the prompt and very well done.
Yep, he did do that one well on that prompt, but he dropped in a few other ones too. The thought with I may be just another fool being played and taken to school. And like the one you read, logic is a fine way to work out an equation, but there are numbers that function without logic upon the heart. Hits on that idea of fools and suckers, because that last line, to enjoy the effects of lunacy, as I have a great story to tell. And that great story kind of sounds like being taken to the cleaners afterwards as a fool and a sucker, because you always got to take advantage of a sucker. They're born every minute. And this one kind of starts off with the note of ease and the fact that, the thought about, when I was thinking with the wrong thing. So, yes, you got suckered. Nice. Nicely done there, Tom.
Yep, you're right there. Great observation. All the blood rushed to the wrong head. So, very cool. All right, well, next we have Gouda and Guile by Jody Melton. There once was a clever cat, slick and sly, with a taste for cheese and a rat in his eye. He'd slink through the shadows, his whiskers alert, seeking out rats with a diabolical plan that was sure to work. With bated breath, he'd tiptoe so light, down rat holes he'd venture, his plan taking flight. The rats would tremble, their tiny hearts pounding, as the cat approached, their cheese-filled holes resounding. The cat with cunning would take a deep breath. Cheese in his mouth, he'd tempt them to their death. He'd exhale with glee. Oh, what a sight! With the scent of cheddar, their noses would ignite. The rats they'd follow, lured by the scent, into the trap their curiosity would have them commit. But little did they know what the devious cat planned. He'd devour the cheese, leaving them with empty hands. With satisfaction, he'd lick his paws clean. Victory for the cat, a feast for the king, a king. The rats defeated would scamper away, bewildered and hungry, their pride in disarray. Oh, that clever cat with his cheesy disguise, feeding on cheese while the rats met their demise. With bated breath, he played the game so well, leaving the rats with nothing but a tale to tell. So beware, little rodents, when cheese is near, for the clever cat's presence should strike you with fear. He'll breathe in the holes with mischief in his eyes and lead you to the trap, so you better be wise. And if you can't resist the cheesy smells that arise, once again the cat's belly will swell. Better say your goodbyes. End poem.
Very good. I like the ease and humor in this one and the devious angle drawn. It's like Tom and Jerry, except Tom actually gets the damn rats or mice in this purview. And smart, too. Don't just nibble on the cheese and get cheese breath for you. You just swallow the whole damn cube and breathe hard. Nothing like an open maw, fresh for the taking. The mice roll in, and the rest scamper back, telling tales of dismay and how the cat is now the mouse trap instead of the trapper, or the tracker for that matter. Just lying in wait. Come on. I got an empty belly and breath full of cheese. Come on down to my little wheeze. I like this. Thank you, Jody. And Golda and Gal. Golda and Gal. Golda.
I like this one, too, and that was a great comment, Rex. I have to say I really appreciate Jody Melton and his support of our shows and contests recently. I've come to discover him and that he's a very wonderful rhyming poet, a great metered rhyme, a gift for storytelling, you know, and this is another one with a moral lesson. And I like his attention to detail. I like that he put Gouda in the title and then mentions cheddar. And, you know, it, like you said, it does have a Tom and Jerry feel, but this time Tom ends up getting the rat or getting the mouse. I really like with bated breath, he played the game so well, leaving the rats with nothing but a tale to tell. And, of course, the words of warning. So beware, little rodents, when cheese is near, for the clever cat's presence should strike you with fear. That idea, if something smells too good to be true, it probably is. You know, and the funny thing is I don't even know, like, well, obviously mice must like cheese, but I have never known anyone to actually trap a mouse with cheese. Anytime you see it, I see anybody trap a mouse or I've trapped a mouse, it's always with, like, peanut butter, something that will actually stick to the trap.
That's the peanut butter sticks to the little nodule there. Cheese, once you hit it, even if you hit it lightly, the trap is sprung. So you need the something that sticks.
So, exactly.
You know what? Get the spreadable cheddar or the cheese in a can. That works.
Cheese in a can. There you go. That's actually not a bad idea. That's a good idea. Although cheese in a can, I'd probably just save that for my own crackers, to be honest. But, yeah, this is quite the clever and fun write on a sly cat who's just ready for his next meal. and definitely not going to share. So very well done by Jody.
Yeah, the American cheese makers back in the day wanted to call American cheese because it's processed. They wanted to call it embalmed cheese.
I remember you mentioning that before. That would definitely not have been a good marketing choice. But yeah,
well,
that's the idea.
They wanted to kill it because it cut into their angle of properly made cheese.
Yes. Yep. Well, I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan of American cheese and that stuff that's the, you know, processed cheese food. I do actually prefer the real stuff for sure. But yeah, I think that just honestly cracks me up to think that they wanted to call it embalmed cheese. And was it World War I or World War II that it was invented for?
World War One. Well, same with the M&Ms.
Yep. Yep, because they needed something that the soldiers could eat.
Yep, chocolate without actually it melting in your hands. So you got that little crispy shell on the outside that it could actually enjoy without it having not. You got to give them a little bit of sugar on the front line. They might need it.
Right, exactly. So there you go, folks. A little bit of tidbit of extra information. You just never know what you're going to get on this show. Cheese curds and M&Ms. All right. Well, up next we have I Don't Eat in Restaurants by Joe Braz. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
I Don't Eat in Restaurants by Joe Braz. Don't eat Italian, especially. Once I watched a chef mix chopped onion and raw egg into ground beef and pork. So far, okay, but when he measured the ingredients together, he washed his hands first. I asked him, what about your dirty fingernails? He said, don't you worry. Once I'm finished mixing this raw ground meat, my fingernails are clean as a whistle. He was right. I ate an Astro burger that night for a cleaner meal. The cook's fingernails are consistently dirty there, not in my food. And bone. Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I feel like Rex said...
Oh, he took prop too. I don't drink water, fish, fucking it. Went a different route.
Wow. Oh man. Didn't mean to step over you. But I was gonna say I feel with all your years that you worked in the food service that you would have an appreciation for this rite. I think this is a great rite by Joe, a wonderful story rite that I assume is on a true experience. And, oh, my gosh, the idea that sometimes we see way more than we want to. I actually saw a study, a news story on the idea that a lot of times the worst health conditions as far as not following rules comes with ice machines, like people scooping up ice without using gloves or without changing, cleaning the scooper. But I did like this all the way through and how he leads us up to the main details. And then so far, okay, but when he measured the ingredients together, he washed his hands first. I asked him, what about your dirty fingernails? He said, don't you worry. Once I'm finished mixing raw ground meat, my fingers are clean as a whistle. And you're going, oh, my goodness gracious. But I told Joe, because I had commented on this, and this is true, I told him that one time I had eaten at an Italian restaurant that had served me a frozen piece of lasagna. And I thought this was quite a fun rite. on an unappetizing dining experience and the lesson learned from it. So very cool and very well done.
Nice. Yeah, ice machines are a problem, but it's not for the for the scoop or anything else. It's always the pink, the yellow, and the black mold that grows along the edges and inside. So the ice machines have to be broken down to the point where you can actually wash them out with hot water and bleach before you turn it back on again. It's got to be done every other month or so. But in the meantime, you can clean them with a spray bottle and a rag. Anyway, I did like this, but yeah, the fact that his fingernails did come out clean after mixing all that, that's definitely a no-no. And the fact, hey, so I ate an Astro burger that night for a cleaner meal. The cook's fingernails are consistently dirty there, not in my food. which goes to the other angle. Hey, this was a mix. Over there, the burgers are already patted. They just put one on the grill and cook it up, stick it on the bun and give it to me. Can't do a whole lot of screw up with that one. But yeah, first thought is when you're mixing raw meat, egg and chopped onions, you should be mixing it with gloves on to begin with. Rule of thumb. Anyway, and how long were his bloody fingernails to actually get cleaned out by the mixture? That's another thing.
Overnight? Oh, my gosh, I can just imagine. Yeah, I mean, to be long enough that you actually notice that they're dirty, and as you said, they get cleaned out by the raw meat. Good Lord. Oh, man. All right. Are we ready for the next one?
Yep.
All right. Well, up next, we have Cheesesteak Relativity by Bill Borden. And it goes like this. Time isn't fair on the banks of the Delaware as flies buzz about awaiting the buffet. It's the fucking fish as fishermen cast their rods with baited cheesesteak breath. Catfishing is what they call it. Relative, I guess, to the time it takes to navigate the dumpster fire that is the bar scene. But I suppose time's fun when you're having flies. Or perhaps I had too much to drink. Or should there be something in the water? It's the fucking fish, I tell you. So grab your vodka and orange juice and break into the speakeasy to have your food and water. Because prohibition is over. Because here in Philly, there's 365 days in 24 blocks. So grab your New Year's drinks and put on your Christmas socks. End poem.
Great read, man. Boy, he took a lot of the props to play with. Let's see. He's taken a... Where was it? I don't drink water, fish, fucking it. I don't know why I ever come here. The flies get the best of everything. Does the clever cat eat cheese and breathe down rat holes with baited breath? And then, once during Prohibition, I was forced to live for days on nothing but food and water. Nice play off all those angles there, Bill. But I did like the... There's 365 days and 24 blocks. So grab your New Year's drinks and put on your Christmas socks. Boy, how loaded were they? But I like the back end of this too, or the front end. A fisherman casts their rods with baked cheesesteak breath. Catfishing is what they call it. It's the fucking fish. It's the fucking fish, I tell you. Oh, he did. Yeah, he actually said that. It's the fucking fish, I tell you. Nice. Yeah, if you're going to do it, you might as well have vodka and orange juice to stay away from the fish. The banks of the Delaware? There might be some pollution on that one. As flies buzz about waiting the buffet. Yeah, that sounds like a righteous meal. Funny, too funny, Bill. Too funny, Bill. Thank you very much. And Pam.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. This cracked me up. It put a smile on my face. I was so glad to see that Bill Borden was inspired. Loved your comment, Rex. And it was so cool to see. And am I off mute? Yes, I am. Okay,
nope.
Good. All right. Well, and it was so great to see the humor that he put in this and how he blended the different prompts together, how you could see the individual influence of the different prompts, and yet they fit together. So it didn't feel too jagged. I like that he brought up the catfishing, the idea of not only literally fishing, but the catfishing online, pretending to be way far more attractive than you actually are. And when he put in, this part really cracked me up, was, but I suppose time's fun when you're having flies.
I thought that was good. Ooh.
That was awesome.
The dumpster fire, that is the bar scene. How blotto you got to be to eat flies. And what the hell did the bar look like?
Oh, my gosh. So true. All the way through, great humor. Another part I really like is, so grab your vodka and orange juice and break into the speakeasy to have your food and water because prohibition is over. It's just great. The humor in this, the references, so absolutely clever. I love it. Very well done.
Hi, Hats. Can you hear us? Thumbs up in the room if you can.
Is that the right link? Yeah, that's the right link. That is the right link. And
yep.
Our show is on live. She might just have to refresh or something. So hi, Hats. That's the right link.
Okay.
Well, I would assume with that link she's hearing us. And if not, the problem is... Yeah.
All right.
What's that?
Let's hit the next piece.
Oh, yes. The next piece. All right. Well, I am actually now going to put my poem up, which was written to multiple prompts. It was originally just going to be written to I don't drink water, fish fuck in it, but I kind of threw other ones in there too. And anyways, I wrote this to be read in a male voice. So obviously, Rex, since you are the male in the room, would you please read this for me?
Cucumber Water and Trout Streams by Pomeroy. I walked into the party half-wasted and fully prepared to drink wine and spirits on someone else's budget. So imagine my surprise and disappointment when I looked around, had steaming cups of tea, finger sandwiches, and petite cakes. It was the kind of food and drink not befitting a man whose main goal in life was to stay in a permanent state of intoxication. A woman with a rather weak chin and a grim set to her mouth came up and offered me a tall glass of water with cucumber slices floating in it. Oh, bloody hell! It was bad enough to be offered something that fish had previously fucked in, but that she felt the need to toss in a vegetable that had been ripped from her manure-laden garden was incomprehensible. Another woman, who had a look of desperation, as if she needed not only everyone's approval, but had to be quickly married before Spencer had set in, held up a tray with a selection of sandwiches made with the same wet, sloppy slices of complete and utter dullness. I'm the type of man that prefers dinner with a cork in it, with occasionally some roast beef and buttered potatoes on the side. They look agonizingly aloof. I couldn't help but think both of them would be quite a bit happier if they used the cucumbers to twiddle each other into orgasm rather than force said produce upon unsuspecting guests. I excused myself from their presence, mumbling half-heartedly that I was going to say hi to a friend. The truth was, I didn't know anybody here. I had been invited to a barely known acquaintance on what seemed to be a whim. It was also the truth that in general I despised people. I much preferred the company of fish and other wildlife. That is, as long as they weren't bumping uglies in front of me. I was considering leaving when I saw a woman who was high on more than life, toddling about and giggling in a slightly insane way. I have to confess, I have a weakness for insane women, mind you, not the kind of loonies that screech and bang their heads against the wall, but rather the type of madness that says, I don't give a damn what anyone else thinks, I want booze, I want sex, and fuck you, I will show off my legs and tits. I admire a woman who knows her legs and tits are worth showing off. I have a fondness for a woman with the kind of insanity that makes the rest of society judge them while I fall madly in love, at least for a day or two. I walked over and promptly asked what she had in her cup. Well, sir, she replied, 'tis nothing but a bit of tea. Balderdash, I said, and winked boldly at her, which made her giggle and even louder, and sent a flush the color of a poor man's wine streaking across the bridge of my nose and cheeks. I gladly followed around the rest of the night, sneaking sips of whiskey and kisses that turned like tar and tickled like a bearded woman. She had such a comely way of wiggling her plump ass, as if she knew I was thirsty. I was a thirsty trout ready to splash about in her stream. And boom.
Oh, bravo, Rex. Thank you. That was an awesome read.
Well, you took all those prompts to task. Yeah, cucumber water. Oh, fuck that. Damn, cucumber water. Whoever thinks of that type of crap ought to be shot. If that's how you get your daily vegetables, then you ain't doing nothing right. Ooh. Bad enough you got to offer up cucumber sandwiches. Don't put damn things in the water. Oh, God. Well, that's a hell of a story, dipping into all of those problems. And despised people, much prefer the company of fish and other wildlife. That is, as long as they weren't bumping uglies in front of me. Yeah. How do fish mate? Oh, yes, they spawn and they spawn. Yeah, that would be pretty rude. But the thought of insane women, not the kind of loonies that screech and bang their heads against the wall, but rather the type of madness that says, I don't give a damn what anyone else thinks. I want booze, I want sex, and fuck you. I will show off my legs and tits. And there's the appreciation angle. Show them off.
Yep. Exactly. It was a little bit long-winded, but I couldn't help it. I just was having so much fun playing with the different prompts and the character. So thank you. Thank you very much, Rex, for the read and the inspiration.
Oh, where are we going next?
All right. Well, up next we have Prompt 10 by Chris Bond. You see what I do there, Rex? I make you read my 500 and some odd word poem. And then I get this nice little shorty to read for myself. That is my diabolical plan. All right, Prompt 10 by Chris Bond. I get called a barrage of names. Every variation is nearly the same. I turn the other cheek to them, pull up collar and close my ears, refuse to answer the cat calls and jeers. Silence is the best reply to ignorance. I do have a name, was born with it. Can't remember last time it was used. It seems an eon suffering abuse. Maybe one day I'll speak out personally or leave documentation for posterity. Maybe it will leave the few conscientious with red faces and poem.
Great read, Pam. Well, I gotta ask a question. That thought, refuse to pull up, call and close my ears, refuse to answer the cat calls and jeers. Silence is the best reply to ignorance. I do gotta ask one question, Chris. Where are you going that you're getting cat calls and jeers? And what exactly are you wearing?
Oh man, it's been years since I've gotten a cat call. I want to know where Chris is going, but
well, I guess the first one easy. I got called a barrage of names. Each every variation is nearly the same. I turned the other cheek to them. I kind of hit that note of don't bother me. Just turn the other cheek. But then that second stanza just, all right, where the hell are you going?
Right. Right, exactly. I liked this. I liked your comment. That was funny. But I do have to say I also see a bit of seriousness in this. I do think, and I could be wrong, maybe he is writing this in a first-person narrative from his own point of view. But I actually think that he's writing this from the voice of a woman with the cat calling. And honestly, I get the idea perhaps so a woman who's a hooker or a streetwalker, somebody that nobody really gets to know. But it's interesting because for whatever reason, this person is getting called names, and whether it's, his personal experience, and he's the one getting the cat calls, or he's writing it from the perspective of somebody else. I think it's a great write on the idea of somebody who's constantly bullied. And it is so true. The worst thing you can do with bullies is get angry. That's what they want you to do. However, sometimes you just have to learn to stand up for yourself. All my kids, I always told them, don't start the fights, but don't be afraid to finish them, And some people disagree with that, but that's okay. That's what I taught my kids. And then the ending with the idea of, maybe someday I'll speak out or at the very least write about it. Absolutely. The world is filled with arrogant and ignorant people, for sure. So, great write by Chris.
Well, there's one angle you haven't hit on.
What's that?
There is one angle you haven't hit on. The women's clubs, where they go in, get rowdy, nasty, drunk, and they're hands-on for the guys on stage.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, that would be a completely different poem. That would be a poem that I would write. So, yep. Yeah, I don't get the impression with this, right, that there's rowdy women, but oh, my goodness, they do exist.
Well, the cat calls and jeers. No, the women at those shows are flat out rude, raucous, and raunchy. Guys don't do that. Guys don't do that in strip clubs. The women do. Yes,
that's
we get blamed for going to strip clubs. That's kind of a strange thought.
Yeah. I will say, though, in my lifetime, I've seen way more men do catcalling than I have women. But you're right. It does happen. There are women out there that get raunchy and do the catcalling. So, Chris, if you were walking and you heard me catcalling you, I just want to apologize for my behavior.
All right, what's up next?
All right, let's see what we have next.
Don't puppet me. Right. I asked you to go inside, but you didn't go. Tough shit.
Somebody's just going to have to hold it. You know, she'll probably go find like a favorite shoe or something to go in.
Nope, I beat her ass.
Yeah.
Then I'd pick her up by her legs and I'd wash her in it to clear it up. Then put her outside.
Yep. Yep, exactly. They got to learn. That's for sure. That's for sure. All right. Well, up next we have Silver Breakfast by Cedar Chapman. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Silver Breakfast by Cedar Chapman. Do you remember the day when silver clouds flickered in and out and blemished the sun as we stood by the water in our polished black and white? The photographer tried tirelessly to manage the f-stop with old-school film, not that digital stuff used today. That picture still stands on our mantle, decades old, motionless like a broken clock, trying to remember what squeaky springs on a futon mattress sounds like. Did we have oatmeal with brown sugar every day this whole week? I often wonder if we both prefer the high-pitched burr and the smell of fresh coffee beans over our morning silence. And our neighbors' bedrooms are also mausoleums where dead people sleep, tossing and turning over assisted living, college funds, and retirement plans. Each day you trudge on, perfectly orchestrating the opulence of laundry, piano practice, and three square meals. Occasionally, you smile at me while refilling the hummingbird feeder, rapidly admiring them as they fly free from house to house. This is where I join you on the back porch and puff out my feathers, hoping that gray equals black and white. I hold your hand, compliment the brown sugar, knowing that tomorrow with you will always be better than yesterday. End poem. All right, what do you got?
Oh, great read there, Rex. And this was one of our open poetry writes, because we've now gone into open poetry. I thought this was wonderful. I see he won a silver in the contest. You know, great imagery in this, thoughtful writes. I like how there's that sense of nostalgia in it, especially when he brings out the idea of the camera. The photographer tried tirelessly to manage the f-stop with old-school film, not that digital stuff used today. That picture still stands on our mantle, decades old, motionless, like a broken clock, trying to remember what squeaky springs on a futon mattress sound like. And then the idea of the everyday stuff, you know, sitting out on the porch, having oatmeal together with brown sugar, and how love is shown through action rather than necessarily through words. Each day you trudge on, perfectly orchestrating the opulence of laundry, piano practice, and three square meals. And there's just a wonderful touch of romanticism within a long-term relationship. I hold your hand, compliment the brown sugar, knowing that tomorrow with you will always be better than yesterday. Wonderful, right? On the whole idea that each day just keeps getting better, you know, and the love keeps getting stronger. Very well done.
Or the printing effect isn't working, so that sort of tomorrow will always be better than yesterday. Yesterday is that reference to the moment that he's offering up. Because he hit that, where was it? I often wonder if we both prefer the high-pitched burr and the smell of fresh coffee beans over our morning silence. And are our neighbors' bedrooms also mausoleums where dead people sleep? Kind of a nice backhanded reference to their love life being a mausoleum. And the thought of rolling out this is where I join you on the back porch and puff out my feathers, an attempt hoping that gray equals black and white, a return to the beginning where they shone grandly in the early days. And then with, and I thought, I'd hold your hand, compliment the brown sugar, right, because you need to. And knowing that tomorrow with you will always be better than yesterday, because the tomorrow offers promise, but you're knowing the yesterday is already today, which is kind of a nice twist on it. And that kind of,
that is.
Yeah, things ain't changing. I'm still getting fucking oatmeal with brown sugar, and we're going to do the same shit, and it ain't going to change.
Ah, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I could kind of see it that way, especially with the idea of the silence and the mausoleum. I guess I was kind of skipping over those parts and looking at it as more of the idea of something romantic in a long-term relationship, which I think it still could be that. I think romance can be found in the common and the everyday. But I do get what you're saying, especially with the mention, as you were pointing out, of the mausoleum and the silence and the idea that things just don't change. And sometimes that gets to be rather dull. So, very cool.
All right.
All right. Well, I am going to grab a drink of water. All right.
That was Hap's contest.
Oh, it was in Hap's contest. Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
Definitely an awesome contest to get a silver in. Hap's run some great contests.
Got to do some tap, tap, tapping on the coolies.
Well, I see, and she was moved by Cedar's poem, so, you know, that says something. All right, well, up next, we have a poem by our favorite Frisian, Ben Hart. And I can declare that since, as far as I know, he's the only Frisian that I know, he is my favorite. Probably will remain my favorite after I know some more. But in the meantime, this is The Professionals, and it goes like this. The contract killer, cessation. I'm like Medusa, love. You don't want to look me in the eyes. It's not a place anyone comes back from. And tonight, my Midas touch is not a loving one. So you better run while you still can. Because I say I'll try tomorrow, but I'll still not be a good man then. I remember Kentucky. I remember Tennessee. And how both times those southern mamas were the death of me. And I remember the man who took a stand, and with barren hands chased smoke because it looked better in his lungs than it did leaving them. But when Charlotte was still a loving name and not the title of my worst decision, and mine yet meant something to the game and the unwilling opposition, because mine was the vengeance hand of death, an all-believing instrument of penitence, and by the kick of the colt at the back of your head, the hourglass starts filling up with blood, and your soul starts running like a foal right into the sunrise where mother hides, giving back to God and everything you were not. Because despite popular belief, death is not darkness. That's just the light blinding upon welcoming us back, and I can't say I didn't let out a sigh of relief when God put my name on the list and asked, still thinking of running, Jack? Don't you want to see your girl again and scream at me for Charlotte's end? And I'll promise that I'll sing at Holy Gates, sheing, death is a Dutchman, even though they may forget who gave their words meaning. The boxer in your. He licks his wounds with numbed tongue, but that doesn't stop the whiskey from biting at his blood. and the bird in the corner sings him a song, something sad for a heart already broken. But she'll break some more just because he had no look of hope to speak of before. And maybe this way he'll think of her next time he's falling to the floor. The war queen reckoning. Poets, beware of cold wind blows over scorched heather in the wake of the jack of spades. No more reincarnation. Here only death has gathered. Have you not taken note of that which has already altered around you? The flight of the sparrow and the haste their little hearts barely can withstand? Something's coming. Something ravenous will escape from her eye down blushing hill, and it will kill to still its hunger for the blood of the herd who thinks they are allowed to call themselves by her title, Queen of Poets, without putting up the hurt, the toll we must pay to paint our name every day on the wall of perpetuity with the fleeting ashes of Eden. And the day Ben finally dies will be the day when she asks him to leave her be, and he will understand and for the last time take a knee. The warrior, the gardener, equilibrium. He's come home all the way to the foot of the hill and brought with him the winter, the cold corruption of the summer rains that washed him down. Hello, Father. I saw you lit the peach tree on fire. My condolences. He's come home from the unforgiving valley, not a kindness weathering, but a destructive temperance that has come to remold every beautiful outlier. Hello, Elman. You know she asked for you when the sun started to set. Have you come to destroy me, strike in the hour of grief? He's come home, the outcast heir to the eternal, and he's brought an army of men that don't know yet they're to be fed to his garden instead of tend to it. He's come home all that way with the image of his father's grave burned onto his eyes like a dream trying to escape into reality. He's come home. He's come home. And already saw so much of it go to waste, but never expected the same fate awaited the hate that had sustained him. No, Father, I think I came all this way for you to kill me. Lay me in the ashes of that peach tree. Let me be the proof that from decay comes growth again. The timekeeper, Ermanesia. The present belongs to the architects who were born into emptiness and saw not the distance but a canvas that could use the contrast of the beautiful dame. And so he built it, and so they came. The future belongs to the composers, and sadly the silence nemesis as well. The future is hell, one we ourselves chose. When in that exact cruel prison, we rush to make a home. The past belongs to the dead, who must still be living in it because I have been screaming their names and have heard nothing back. But if I have enough hurt in my heart and some air in my lungs yet, you'll best believe I'll try again. The stargazer, onism, Kenopsia is kind of like a Polaroid. You swore had people on it. And though the background may change, the Boca rain, I said, look like a starfall blooming will never flower again. And perhaps I'd rather have 1,000 words with you than something else to add to the silence of your absence. I may have thought that the earth in the eye of Eloise was a happy one, when I still hoped a single good day would mean remission, watching shadows leap to the light every time I turn my head, hoping it's you, ready for another round of leaving me. and poem.
Gregory Pam, I thought you were giving that one to me.
I considered it, and I probably should have, but I thought, honestly, since you had read my fairly long poem, and I took the short one after that, that I would go ahead and take this one.
Well, the whole thing bites on death, but he also had that notice in the back end of this, when I still hoped a single good day would mean remission. So that's kind of a note to a disease, something which gnaws at the soul, and maybe that's the idea of what walks through this, through the whole thing, the understanding note of mortality and what it means to in different venues at the moment. I mean, the boxer was the shortest one, but it does hit on that idea of that single punch that that you take, but you never really get up from. But you're taking a beating anyway during the day, during the course of it. And that one with the queen, he even drops himself. Was it the queen? There was one where he, yes, the queen. On the wall of perpetuity with the fleeting ashes of Eden, and the day Ben finally dies will be the day when she asks him to leave her be, and he will understand, and for the last time, take a knee. Again, that note to mortality, death. So there is notes to love in here too, but there's, and even a religious overtones, not religious, those spiritual overtones, and the idea of asking oneself, what is the meaning of my life? And he starts out with the note of the contract killer, and calling himself Medusa, but also and tonight my Midas touch is not a loving one. And so kind of hits on that idea, yeah, I'm a contract killer, and the thought of having a Midas touch in the moment, everything he touches is gold. Yeah, that's kind of like I'll take you out easy. So the idea of the Midas touch not being a loving one that night means, yeah, better run, because I'm in a butchering type of mood, so to speak. But still, it all comes tumbling into a perspective of introspection, looking in the mirror, maybe evaluating life a piece at a time through different venues. Because that's hard. And by the kick of the colt at the back of your head, the hourglass starts filling up with blood, and your soul start running like a foal right into the sunrise where mother hides, giving back to God everything you are not. There's a whole lot more. There's a deeper undertone. It does kind of hit on the idea of evaluation, especially of oneself and one's life, especially with the thought of remission on the back end. But maybe it is an idea of coming back to that which you left behind. Reevaluate self.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. I really like this, and how he brings in the different characters and how they can represent individuals, but they can also represent individual identities of one person. Beautifully written vignette, grabs your attention and keeps it all the way through. And yeah, I probably should have had you read this one. Your voice would have been more fitting for it. But like I said, I was trying to make things somewhat fair. I like how it speaks on death and love and loss and how sometimes, you know, we just want to experience the hurt over again. Because experiencing the pain and the hurt means we'll be experiencing the love over again. I really like this all the way through, but part two especially spoke to me. the boxer. He licks his wounds with numb tongue, but that doesn't stop the whiskey from biting at his blood, and the bird in the corner sings him a song, something sad for a heart already broken, but she'll break some more. With the mention of the singing bird, and I know there's a very Bukowski feel to those lines, and I like how he says, also, something ravenous will escape from her eye down Blushing Hill, and it will kill to still its hunger for the blood of the herd who think they are allowed to call themselves by her title, Queen of Poets, without putting up the hurt. You know, and that makes me think of the idea of like, I forget what they're called exactly, but like justice killers, or, you know, people who kill because they think they're doing good for society. You know, people who kill because they think they're standing up. And the part with the coming home of the son made me, of course, think of the Bible story of what is it called? The something son, the Bible, what's the word they use? Prodigal. Yeah, the coming home of the prodigal son. And how there's this twist in it, and the idea that the burning of the peach tree means the destruction of a way of life, you know, and I like the mention of different mythology throughout, and how this speaks on the idea in the end of someone who has these deep, meaningful, and yet at the same time, dark dreams. You know, as I was mentioning, the whole idea of wanting to experience the pain over again. An amazing write by Ben, and just beautifully done.
Nice. All right. What's up next?
All right, up next we have Wildflowers by Neutron Bomb. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Wildflowers by Neutron Bomb. A translucent tapestry of gossamer origami glints in the rays of the sun. The dragonfly, in its dizzying frenzy, is lost against the vibrance of the canola crops and sunflower fields that puncture the landscape. She plants seedlings by the roadside. Entangled wildflowers and grass caress her legs like soft lips traversing the troughs of nubile skin. A web of goosebumps flocks her flesh. The hairs on her forearms stand on end, resembling the eucalyptus trees that line the arterial highway. She's given up on that white picket fence parody. A lone motorbike weaves through the dandelions, dancing in the cool afternoon breeze. The rumble of exhaust pipes give rise to gasoline fumes to fill the air. They intermingle with the floral notes that hijack her breath and weaken her resolve. Cold steel glances melt through pockets of ice to reveal her warmth and smile. And poem.
Great read, Rex. I tell you, it is so good to see Neutron. I was so happy when she popped up and I got a message from her and saying that we could use this poem on the show if we wanted to. As always, her imagery and metaphors are brilliant. I like how this speaks in general to me of the idea of a woman who wants to escape. And maybe she wants to escape because the dreams she thought she wanted haven't come true. And she, like it says, she's given up on them. Or maybe it's that she's realized that it's not anything she ever truly wanted. I love the imagery in the dragonfly in its dizzying frenzy is lost against the vibrance of the canola crops and sunflower fields that puncture the landscape. And I like how that works well as a metaphor for the idea of how easily we can become lost in this world. A powerful line. She's given up on that white picket fence parody. A lone motorbike weaves through dandelions, dancing and the cool afternoon breeze, the rumble of exhaust pipes give rise to gasoline fumes to fill the air. You can almost see within your mind's eye the idea of this woman just wanting to live wild and free. You know, at least that's the thoughts that I get. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. All right. I don't know. She'd given up on that white picket fence parody. And the planting of the seedlings kind of hits on a note of a roadside memorial. And that last stanza, a lone motorbike weaves through dandelions dancing in the cool afternoon breeze. The rumble of exhaust pipes give rise to gasoline fumes to fill the air. They intermingle with flaw notes that hijack her breath and weaken her resolve. Cold steel glances melt through pockets of ice to reveal her warmth and smile. I still got a hit on that note of roadside memorial. Cold steel glances melt through pockets of ice. Did that motorcycle come rolling down that road, hit an ice patch, the pockets of ice to reveal her warmth and smile, the idea of a memory that's left in the in her stead? Don't know.
Oh, that would make sense, yeah. That's actually a really cool observation there.
Oh, all right,
are you
wrong.
Still
that's
there? Okay. Oh, there you are.
Yep, all right. Where are we going next?
All right, well, up next I'm going to put my other right, which was written to a contest that Papa Terminus ran, and was a song title contest, and I wrote to the song titles Invisible, Rainbow in the Dark, and Shame of the Night. All right, and it goes like this. There are ghost girls walking rainbows in the dark. You can find them in the alleys. You can find them in the park. They linger in the looming of neon lights that glare. Red lips and coal-rimmed eyes provide a gothic flare. They're freakish fetish flames riding the L train. No one ever sees them till they need the pleasure and pain. The northern winds are blowing through the hot dog stands, and the unholy chimes are ringing in this risen tower land. The blues are crying out for love, guitar strings scream of lust, and metal knows that you'll survive if you remember not to trust. There are angels on the sidewalks that point the way to sin, and the powdered sugar offered has the magic of the gin. No one sees the sadness in cinnamon eyes. They're too busy jumping toadstools to see if they can fly. Kaleidoscopic colors in a Lolita mattress stain. Invisible girl has ran away, left behind the paper cranes. No more folding origami, no more rabbit's feet for luck. The broken youth are walking dead and no one gives a fuck. So drink your imported beer and smoke your fine cigar while the dropping cinders become another dying star. There's nothing left but the needle in the arm, and the people paying cash forget the saying, do no harm. The fading wraiths of girls scream to graffiti-painted walls, giving birth to invisible babies left in bathroom stalls. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I remember the contest. Ronnie James Dio. Diver Down album.
Yeah.
Yep. Fun contest. I enjoyed the puzzle of putting that together. Anyway, this kind of just, there's a bleak angle to this. It's kind of a cross between Hollywood Nights, well, the Lost Hollywood Nights, and the Girls from Sin City. Got a quiet, nice touch of nastiness to it. All the color bled out, except the little touches of splotches here and there, a little red, a little yellow, just for the sense of reality sparking through. But it does kind of walk that tone. I like that.
Thank you. Yep, and congratulations. Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, I have to say congratulations on the gold in that contest. It was definitely well-deserved. You had an awesome piece there.
That was fun. I like the puzzle.
It was.
Because most people won't take the entirety. I like the entirety. Especially if you kind of dared into it. Because he'd put a little dare in there. He opened up the contest. I don't want to see a half a dozen rights to this particular song or that particular song. Show me something. Hell, I'd like to see something with all of them.
Yep, exactly. I know even with me only taking three, I tried to take three that at the time weren't taken by other people. So, yeah, you're right. I actually look forward to him doing more contests like that because it was fun to delve into. So, cool.
I think I dropped in an extra three or four songs from his Black Sabbath thing, too.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, you are good for stuff like that. That is for sure. All right. Well, I do have one last poem if you want to get that one in.
Yep.
All right. And that is Do Not Go Into the Light by Weaver of Dreams. And go ahead, Rex.
Okay, we got aliens. Do not go into the night. Into the Lights by Weaver of Dreams. The day slips away, second by second, as evening falls and darkness holds sway. That's when I'm aware danger is here, hidden, but palpable. What it is has puzzled me since I was a child. Why the hatred, the vile whispers that I only hear? I must confront the creatures, take back my life. The question is, how? Too late. The heat leaves my room and chills me. A bright light illuminates gray bodies with huge eyes. Herded to the center of the beam, I'm lifted, taken aloft. What terrors await me now? End poem. Go into the light. Go into the light.
Oh, man, this was great. It's funny because earlier today on the Twisted Tuesday show, Lawrence had a write about aliens, and now we got Kate with a write about aliens. it's like a sci-fi version of Dylan Thomas's Don't Go Gently Into the Good Night. What it is has puzzled me since I was a child. Why the hatred, the vile whispers that only I hear? I must confront the creatures, take back my life. The question is how. Kate has a great way of telling stories in a first person narrative that draws you right into the action. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, I got two things. Because of that middle stanza, the question note there, is the child in this envisioning the aliens because the mind needs to protect it from the reality of adults doing vile, whispered and hateful things to it. And that's the mind being able to cope by by having it shut out or offered up as something else that is more alien in the note. But there is another one. There is an alien abduction case that they can't dispute because a ton of people saw it and gave statements, including a couple of New York City judges. This woman was that well, not zapped. Yeah, kind of like you get zapped. You kind of fold up in this light, arms hanging down. You're born out lifeless, but you are still living your sleep. And travel across the Hudson River, across through the bridge, being noticed by a ton of people, and disappeared into God knows what. And it got caught by all these people, including judges, dressed in black tie and white shirt. They were out going out for a show or something.
Absolutely. I like that. Very cool. I did not know that. That was interesting to learn.
I forget his name. The one they made the movie on. He disappeared for 7 days, came back naked. He was a logger.
Oh, I've heard about that one. Yes.
Yeah.
That one I heard. I can't remember his name.
Every one of those guys, they all packed God, but I think they all must have done 20 to 50 lie detector tests apiece. They all passed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That was the movie Fire in the Sky.
And great show tonight, Rex.
Yes, it was a lot of fun doing something a little different. Kind of hard to keep picking out the hard edge angle. You've got to keep digging. I've done this one. Yeah, I've done this one 10 times. You can't keep going back to the same trough. So I thought, well, maybe WC's got something to play with. A little bit of humor wouldn't hurt either. So, I did like that one. I don't drink water. Fish fucking it. So that was a nice touch.
Absolutely. And next week, I have a contest up for that, and it's a poem by Allen Ginsberg, not Howl. It's one of his haiku poems, like a series of haikus. That'll be something for people to dig into.
Haikus? Okay.
Well, you have to read it to understand. Like, there's more to the poem than just it being, you know, haikus. It's written in the 5-7-5 format, but you got to take a look at it. You take a look at it and all the imagery and thoughts that are offered up, and you'll see that there's actually plenty to dig into.
Okay, okay.
You sound so doubtful. Jeez.
Well, how graphic does it get?
Well, I don't know. There may be some body parts mentioned.
Well, that's not
really graphic. I think maybe at one point there's some wiggly giblets mentioned. For the most part, well, here, let me take a look. Let me take a look if there's any particularly graphic part. Okay, well, here's about as graphic as it gets. A hard-on in New York, a boy in San Francisco.
Okay.
Don't worry. It's not too bad. I'm not going to get you in any trouble.
That's all right. Well, we'll do this again next Tuesday morning with a little bit of dirty.
Have a good night, Rex.
All right. Good night.